Governor's birthday. And it's also William of Stratford's birthday, and so that would be a good time to return the topic. Hope you can join us at that time.
Oh, that sounds excellent, Doug. Yeah, I would love to.
All right.
Give me the egg. So, tomorrow I got nothing.
I agree that everybody should be born poor 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own beds and different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth, who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. All right, Cameron Mesh here with the... I'm having a hard time with the month change. Actually, I'm thinking it should still be August, but it's September, September 1st, September Without a Roof radio program. And you're listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or their volunteers. Got a packed show tonight, like most shows I do here, the monthly show. We're going to be leading, most of the show is going to be about a really brilliant tiny house community. It's called 14 Forward. It's called 14 Forward because it's on 14th Street in Marysville. I had a chance to go down there with Bob Trausch, board member from Chico Housing Action Team. And that's a transitional tiny house community for people experiencing homelessness in Marysville, California. And we're going to be talking to the public affairs, Russ Brown, the homeless project manager. And gosh, I don't have her name in front of me. It was a very tricky name. She has a wonderful little interview with Bob talking about some of the issues of having permanent housing and some of the actual residents there. And a neat little interview with a lady that volunteers there, man. She's 24/7 on site. So this really is, I know back in June, I went to San Francisco for a Solutions to Homelessness journalism on the street. And I interviewed folks across the country about that. And this is kind of a piece like that. We're going to cover an awful lot about tiny houses. Along the way, talking with Bob, he really recommended that we do some coverage on Dignity Village in Portland, up in Oregon, as a model for a tiny house village that is really working well. And I was just blessed because I know Stacey Ware and Gerard Ungerman, Respect for Revolution, did a really cool piece around that. And I'm really pleased to say we're going to do a radio edit on that. And we're going to have Stacey and Gerard in the studio just for a few minutes. And we're going to do a forward promo because I'm doing a longer form piece with them on the 30th. We're really going to dig in on the work they're doing. I just love those folks. And then at the end of the show, we're going to bring on Tara Sullivan from, and maybe some other folks from another organization I have so much respect for. They've done such a brilliant job with 211 Butte County. So, you know, stay tuned for all of that. I also want to do a quick forward promo. Myself and a program, Youth for Justice, out of the Peace and Justice Center, and Kate Erickson, a local photographer and advocate here in Chico, California. We've started Chico's version of Facing Homelessness, which is folks that listen to Without a Roof or Peace and Social Justice. I've had Rex Holbein from Seattle, Washington. He's actually done TEDx talks around kindness and the humanity of being homeless. And we've done a couple of really brilliant pieces. The last one we did was literally done by homeless youth at our Youth for Justice yesterday at the Peace and Justice Center. So look for that page on Facebook, Facing Homelessness in Chico. You'll find about 10 or 12 different pages across the country and across the world that are dealing with that very topic. So just welcome everyone to the show. And we're going to go right into this here. And we're going to start off with a joint interview between Guillermo Mash from Without a Roof, Bob from 14 Forward, and Russ from 14 Forward, and Bob Charles from Chico Housing Action Team, here on People Powered Radio. So, Russ, thanks for having us on your site. This is Guillermo Mash. We're down here at 14 Steps Forward. Is that the name, Russ?
14 Forward. It's here on 14th Street in Marysville. We call it 14 Forward. It helps people to move forward.
Some thanks for having us. And I have Bob Trausch from Chico Housing Action Team with us. And we're going to ask you a little, some questions about the whole process and the wonderful work you're doing here.
Well, that is the first question, actually. What was the impetus to actually put this together on a countywide level? Because I'm assuming this is county land that we're on. And so you're donating, the county is donating this land to get a number of people out of homelessness. What was the impetus that started that movement?
Well, you know, about a year and a half ago, we started seeing a massive increase in the number of homeless moving into our river bottoms, and they pretty much surround the city of Marysville along the Yuba and Feather Rivers. And at first, it was kind of noticeable, but then it became very noticeable to the point that people were pouring in. The trash piles and the debris piles were really happening along our river edges, and it became an environmental issue, but also became a very human issue because our health officer looked down there and said very serious concerns about the health of the folks living there, and we knew we had to address it. At first, of course, the first thought some people say is just clear out the homeless camps, but we knew that wasn't the straight option, that we needed to get the services out in front, get options out in front of these folks so we're not just kicking them out to go to the next community to have the same thing happen to them again and again.
Mm-hmm. So you work for the county, Russ? What's your job? What do you do here?
I work for Yuba County. I'm actually the public information officer. I also do legislative work, so we've been tracking a lot of legislation, a lot of available services out there in terms of helping with
HUD money and other funds available.
Any funds we can get available. A lot of that happens, of course, through our public health and such. So they do a lot of searching for these funds, and they're finding things to help people get permanent housing. So this is only temporary housing, what you see here.
So this is temporary. This is not a housing first model right here. This is just temporary housing. Do you have restrictions as to how long people can be here?
So when people come in, they can stay up to 3 weeks to start with, and then it could be renewed up to three times. So that's up to 84 days. So you're looking at a stay here of 3 weeks, up to 84 days, and during that time, they have to show that they're trying to get services, they're trying to get help with any kind of addiction problems they have, they're trying to recover their documents. They have to be moving forward, and during that time, they have to be moving towards permanent housing.
So I'm assuming that you're helping them, because many times when you're homeless, you can't really get to your meetings, you miss meetings, you're sick, you're in the hospital. So I'm assuming that the county is also helping people to achieve their goals?
And that's the point. We realize that in order for this to work, the services had to be brought to them. If we expect them to go out and find those services, it wouldn't really work for them. It's hard for them. So right now, there's actually one larger building here on this property. There are 20 small units, the shelters, and then the one larger building, and that's where people can go and get their services. We actually schedule throughout the week. You'll have people there in public health helping with health issues, people helping with addiction issues, mental health issues, finding paperwork, finding their ID documents. So these things are all brought to them, and to help these people work through these processes that everybody needs to go through to get towards permanent homes.
So are you helping to get people on SSI if they seem to be qualified for SSI, and if they need to go to other meetings, you have transportation facilities available to get that service?
Absolutely. Even before we put up these houses, we had assessment teams from our public health down in the river bottoms, talking to folks, finding out what are your needs, what are your sources of income currently? Because everybody has some source of income. And then we say, well, there are other possibilities, because we had veterans down there who had lost their documents years ago. And so part of that is they have some income coming in, but if we can work with them and recover some of those lost documents, they can actually get some of their veterans money available for future housing. So we are working with them on that.
So is this kind of an invite process? Like San Francisco, they have a navigation center where the outreach teams kind of pick and choose. Yeah, I shouldn't say pick and choose. They go out and they find the right candidates. Is that what's going on here, or you just show up? What's the process? How do people get in?
The only qualification is to be homeless, and we are kind of working slowly through these homeless encampments. We're not taking them all out at once. Mm-hmm. We're taking sections out as we move along and giving these people the options for services, and we give them a menu. We don't say you have to come here to this one. Salvation Army has programs. Hands of Hope has. There are programs out there to really help people in different ways. If people have families with children, there are already lots of programs, and we can get them right into those services. It's those single folks.
So the county has come up with money, you say, for a homeless advocate, and how did that work out? At what point did you hire that advocate?
Well, we hired a gentleman named Scott Thurman. He's an advocate for homeless issues, and he's a consultant. And so we brought him in. At first, you know, the first thought was to go in and just clean out the camps. But we had to really back up ourselves. That's just a reactive thing. It doesn't really help anybody. So we talked to this guy. We brought him in, first talked to him, and then we hired him. Because he actually helped us understand, if you don't get services out in front first, before you even start looking at things like this 14 Forward project, then you're not going to be helping anybody. And so we had to look at the going down doing the assessments. Our teams went down there and talked to scores of people, finding out who they are, what their situation is. Are they, what kind of addictions they have, or perhaps what kind of money problems they have? What got them there in the first place? How can we help them? And then we develop the services and line those up. And then 14 Forward came along.
You keep using the term 14 Forward. What exactly do you mean by 14 and Forward? Because I understood that you're going to have 20 units here.
And the only reason it's called 14 Forward is because right behind us here is 14th Street in Marysville. Mm-hmm. So on 14th Street in Marysville, there's a piece of property that was owned by the county in the city of Marysville, California. And so we put the 20 units here, and they are tough sheds. We actually work with local organizations, Home Depot and Tough Shed, their vendor. They work together actually to provide discounts and actually design these things. So if you look at these tough sheds, they're 8 feet wide by 14 feet long. There's no electricity. There's no plumbing. But what it is, they cut two windows in the front and a window in the back. So there's a lot of airflow. They have fans in there, battery-operated fans. They have battery-operated lights. And we got these special lights. You can crank them so you can plug in your phones and charge them. These are things we were told. You got to do that. It's kind of like the pets. We were told that if we said no pets, people won't show up. And we didn't realize that. We did get down to the point where we said, you can have one pet. And so we actually, at one end of here, we actually have a kennel back in the corner of all this. Mm-hmm. There's a kennel here for the larger dogs. But for those that want it, we also got the smaller kennels that can go on the front porch. No animals inside, but they can have their dogs or cats, whatever, right there with them the entire time.
So are these units insulated?
They are deeply insulated.
Yeah, awesome.
As a matter of fact, Habitat for Humanity came here. They did the building on the inside. They insulated them. They built the bed frames, and we brought in the special mattresses for everybody.
So you brought in Habitat as well. So you're bringing in quite a few different organizations to work in conjunction with you to create this.
And that's what our advocate that we brought in did, our consultant. He actually helped work with us to identify everybody around here that was a significant player already for years. You're talking about the mission behind us, 40 years doing good work here. Mm-hmm. We had to talk to them because they know what they're doing, and we didn't. And we had to talk to Habitat. We had to talk for Hands of Hope, all those folks, and Salvation Army, big player in this. And they actually helped us kind of form up how we put this all together.
So you're about 45 days in, 50 days in? How many days you guys been doing this?
Just over a month now, about more like 40, 45 days, you're correct, right now. And we see this going on for a while. This could be years. And this will be here for future services because the homeless issue is not going away.
How many people have been housed through the process so far?
You're seeing the first group, and right now they're about 38, and with a huge waiting list. And that's part of the problem we're dealing with. But then again, after a while, we're starting to see people actually get jobs already who have been here. And they're the ones that are slightly be moving over the next few days to permanent housing. So we're starting to see things come together the way that it was sort of envisioned.
Have you had anyone that's been housed through the process? I mean, how many folks have actually physically come through your process in 45 days and found housing?
There are a couple people that are right now being moved into permanent housing, right, and more in line for that. The housing is available now. We have a lot of low-cost housing, and with the income, we're able to help these people pull together. And that some of them, in terms, only a handful so far, but getting jobs. So they're able to get the jobs also along with their income. We're able to get that permanent housing going.
Have you secured any, like, housing stock through, like, Section 8 or some property owners? I mean, do you have, like, certain places that have said, hey, let's do this thing?
Yeah, we actually have identified. There are actually a good number of them off here in Yuba County, off the edge of Marysville and out into the county itself that have that designation of low-cost housing that you can get the Section 8 and other programs assigned to help these people get into them for the subsidized housing.
Looking forward, this is, like you say, it's temporary housing for people. We know under Housing First, we're asking, you know, the government's saying if you want money, you have to house people, you have to have services, follow-up. What are you looking at forward from here? Because we know that people have less money now, there's more part-time jobs. Are you looking at creating a housing project like we see many parts of the country are doing now with smaller homes where they have community centers, where the people are supported? The same type of services you're offering here locally, but have a more permanent structure to it?
We are looking at being flexible in that sense, only because we know that right now we have enough of a opening in terms of housing ahead of us where we can actually move people into. You're right, at some point we don't know what's going to be there, but we have to keep an eye on that so that we can figure out what's next. Well, right now in doing this, it's actually opening more doors for us in terms of working with the federal government and such to get more grants to do more things. Once we get this going, we're finding out those doors are opening.
All right, for folks just joining, you're listening to KZFR 90.1 FM, the monthly Without a Roof radio program. And we're down at 14 Forward down in Marysville, California, Yuba County. And we're interviewing Russ Brown, who's the public relations officer for Yuba County that works on that project right next to the rescue mission and near the levee. And Bob Charles from Chico Housing Action Team. And it's really important that people know that Without a Roof Radio program is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events, including Artoberfest, Chico Paleo, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by Iceborne, your eco-friendly, fresh-from-the-source, clean ice producer. Iceborne is hosting its grand opening Saturday, September 3rd at 434 Plumas Ave in Oroville, next to Colin and Denny's Market. There'll be 10 and 20-pound bagged ice and snow cones available for no cost. And it's on its way to Lake Oroville. All the ice and water goes through a four-step filtration system, making the highest quality of ice. That's Iceborne's grand opening at 434 Plumas Ave in Oroville this coming Saturday. So we're going to get back to this interview on People Powered Radio.
That's a big deal.
So you're saying you have enough housing in the market right now that is not occupied to move people in, which is in, where I come from, Chico, that's not the case.
And unfortunately, part of that is helped by the fact that a lot of people you offer services to don't come here. You know, we get a handful of the people that we displaced essentially already because they don't want to be a part of that. And now our thing is you can't be in Yuba County and just say you're just going to be homeless. You have to take advantage of these services because our river bottoms really suffer. I mean, very much suffer. The garbage was immense down there. I've been down in the river bottoms after an encampment was cleared out, and it was horrible. And it used to be, when I first moved here 30 years ago, people would walk down there, they'd walk along the rivers all the time, and people stopped doing that many years ago.
Well, that's also an indication of the incredible need we have right now because of the growing homeless, because of what's happened in our society.
And they get used to that lifestyle, and I understand that. I understand the idea of freedom, but there are if you're able to put a little more structure in your life, there are opportunities. And that's what this does. People had a hard time here. The first day we opened, we had 11 people. On a Friday, by Monday, there were two left. But then they started coming back again, and now they're starting to create that sense of community. And there are still some that kind of fight the idea of moving forward, but they're more embracing it. And it's good. I think people need to get used to the idea. This is actually a very fresh new concept in this area.
But what I've seen, Russ, in my travels throughout Northern California, and Bob and I talked a lot on the way down about this thing called hope. I mean, these guys are pretty good at math and stuff. They kind of do the math going, there's 300 of us and there's this many of these. So a lot of people kind of give up hope, and some of these people have been living in the river bottoms 10, 20 years, and maybe you're not the first guy that's come by saying, here's something that we can help you with.
No, because, like I say, you've had the mission, you had the Salvation Armies and such out there doing a lot of good work and helping people get out of the situation. There's a lot of temporary interim housing around here available through other programs. But if we're going to go through and start cleaning up our riversides, we need more places to stay. These are emergency shelters, but they are safe. They're helping people. And you're right, there is the problem of kind of getting people past that mindset. We had the people down there for a long time, our health workers, talking to people because we needed to kind of get their mindset changed a little bit. And it was a long process. And the people that came here are the ones that kind of broke out of that fear that they have, understandable fear, to try something new because this is totally different for them. And it's scary. It's scary for them. It's scary for us.
So what's your policy in regards to drug use or alcohol use? What's your policy on
that? And like you say, the mission has like a zero drug and alcohol thing. While we are bringing the services here, we understand that it's not going to change overnight. You cannot do drugs or alcohol here on this campus. Okay? Just like if you have visitors, you can't have visitors on the campus, but you can step 5 feet outside the gate and visit with people. We don't want to see any kind of drug use around here, even through the gate. So if you do it, it's got to be far away from us. We understand it will happen, but our hope is they'll take advantage of those counseling services that we offer and really strive to get beyond those addictions, that's one of the toughest things they're facing.
So you would say this is a harm reduction site? Is there drug testing that goes on? Or
There is no drug testing as a part of this right now. So.
And I think what Will said is really important, that if you give people hope and follow-up services, that really can change the matrix. It can really change the reintegration of people. I mean, people out there, even though they're the other services, you got the mission and all that, but it didn't really move them into housing. It really didn't move them into having the services necessary for whatever their addiction problems with mental illness, whatever it is. Now you're saying, we're going to work on both of these issues for you. We're going to help you with both of those. And it seems to me that's the answer. And that's what Housing First is talking about.
Yeah, exactly. And that puts it all together, because these folks need those first initial things right there at their doorsteps to help them. And like you say, if there's a doctor's appointment they need to, we have people, these various programs that have been around for a long time, they're available to pick them up and take them to those things. So everybody can get remote services, but most of the services are brought right here so they can walk across the campus here and talk to the folks.
Just going back to the city council and the county supervisors, you must have total buy-in by them. I mean, it's really difficult many times to get them. Most city councils I have experience with are saying, you know, they're transients, let's get them out of here. And that's obviously failed for years and years and years. You must have quite a bit of buy-in.
Buy-in was came from our, let me back up a little bit and just say, our county administrator, he was the one that kind of knew he had to start working on this. And he's an old cop. So he said even he had the old cop mentality, get him out of here. But he goes, he had to stop that. He had to back off a little bit and rethink about this. So he kind of came forward and then talked to the board members, and the board came in full supporting it. And this is about up to $200,000 investment that we had. But those costs are going backwards for us, because we're reaching out to the community and say, can you sponsor a building? We had different organizations sponsor individual, about $3,300 for each of these little tough sheds. And they've actually sponsored them and paid for them. So even though we had that $200,000 cost, they've come down. They were going backwards a little bit with those costs coming in.
Actual costs, if you're talking about the other organizations that have helped come in here, like putting insulation, putting the fans in,
right,
all of that is given to the
most of that. Sometimes we help out with purchasing. It's like we're looking at flooring in there, because right now it's a plywood floor. But we talked about, let's get some linoleum there, give it a feeling of home. Let's make sure that they're coverings on the windows for privacy. Those are all things that are important to folks, right? What kind of shelves do they need? All these things we kind of added on a little bit. So that's some of the county costs. And while we knew there'd be costs, we have kind of a fund going forward. And then the merchants even came out and said, you know what? It looks great. Boy, let's give it a homey look. Let's make sure they're all different colors. Let's put some artificial grass and some a stepping area for a porch out there. It made a huge difference. It gives it that more feel of, this is my place. I can put my chair out in front and sit there in front of my place for a while. So people have their individual spots or different colors or different feels to them.
100% occupancy right now?
Right now, like I say, we're at 38 for 40 units. But at the same time, we have a waiting list. So we're just kind of, we leave that one or two gap, because we need to start rotating people in and out.
One of the things I see here, which is really important, is what you're trying to do is make people feel home. Mm-hmm. And that's really important. Mm-hmm. Rather than just a shed people are living in, you've actually taken the time to make people feel that they have, like you say, it's imitation grass, but it's still a place where you're not working on gravel and it's just a plain old shed. You've actually created an atmosphere saying we care, and that's really important.
Right. It had to be something that could be at least cleaned up, maintained on a regular basis, but it had to have that feel of individuality. People, you have some person parks their bike here. That's great. And there's a secure gate around here. People thought, oh, you're putting up a gate to keep us in. No, the gates are unlocked. The gates to protect the investment that the county put forward. I'm looking around here and I see that people have their little lanterns out front. They're solar lanterns. They charge during the day. They can use them during the night, and they can plug their cell phones in. So there are little things that we had to think of that we never would have thought of. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you one other thing we have here is we have a camp host. Mm-hmm. You know, here we have a trailer here. She has her hookups, and she's here. She's the one that if there's a problem, she calls. If the power goes out somewhere, she calls. You know, if something happens, she calls. And that way, and if they have questions, they come to her and they ask her, and she looks for the answer.
So the camp host is a community member, someone that lives here?
We made an arrangement with, gave her a place to stay, so she doesn't have to rent an apartment or something like that. She can stay here if she does her services, and she's been great.
There's a lot of people here. If you have 40 people, have you had any discussions about actually creating a board of the homeless or formerly homeless to actually help to make decisions as to how the camp is run?
Everything we've done, we actually had not just meetings with our group, and this is a large group of our homeless advocate consultant, and we had different departments that are like public works and all that, and then we also had all the different organizations, the Hands of Hope, the Salvation Army, the Habitat for Humanity, in these rooms on a regular basis every 2 or 3 weeks, talking how we do this, what we do this, and they've been correcting us on how we've been moving forward. And then we've actually had meetings with the mayors and representatives of the homeless encampments themselves, sitting down with them, saying, here, we're looking at this, what about this? Sometimes they're like, no, we're not doing that. Other times, and it took a long time to warm up. Right where we're standing right now, there was a ribbon cutting right across here on about the 12th of July. They stretched a ribbon. In the middle, the person that cut it was the homeless mayor for one of our homeless encampments here. And she's hoping someday to be a part of this. She's not yet. But she was not really happy with it at first. We started working more and more and actually incorporating some of her ideas. And now she's totally supporting it and encouraging her folks to look into it.
Have you had to ask anyone to leave, Russ?
Not so far. We have had, of course, issues. Oh, incidents,
but,
exactly.
But you've worked through?
So far, it's so good, and that's a good thing. And there are people that are on the cusp right now.
Do you think some of that might have had to do? I mean, the mission's been here for 40 years. You know, some people have a preconceived notion or some issues that they're faced. Did you have an issue where maybe they felt that this was just an extension of the mission, and there was some communication that you needed to do, or how did that all work out?
Certainly, there's been communication all along. Mm-hmm. We missed some of those preconceived notions, and that's going to happen.
Yeah.
The mission has been extremely, extremely part of this. Like, yeah. I say, we have meals that are supplied. Two of them are in the mission every day. One is meals brought here by the Salvation Army every day. People have a sense they're being fed, they're being comfortable. It's scary. We don't want to be too comfortable.
Shout out to Russ and Bob for that interview. Got a packed show, man. I'm going to cut that like a couple of minutes short to just kind of welcome our representatives from 211 Butte County. They're going to be coming on after Gerard Ungerman and Stacey Ware are going to be our first live guests after I go through the rest of the interview segments from Marysville. And I'm transitioning to what's always kind of my favorite part. There's a couple of interviews with actual residents at 14 Forward here on People Power Radio. Number three home here, Robert, or no?
Number three is beyond heaven to me, because I was living on the road in a sleeping bag on the ground with nothing. And I moved into here. I've got this house now. I've got a roof over my head for in the weather. I've got a comfortable bed to sleep on now instead of the dirt. I get free clothes from the mission right next door, so I've got all the clothing supplied now. I get food free. It's pretty much heaven to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I have to say.
And then you got this beautiful bike here. Somebody saw you kind of looking through a dumpster diving, and they said, hey, you need a bike. Boom.
That's
Is
right.
that what happened?
That's what happened. I got it for a free gift from a stranger on the street. Made me in heaven, because I had three of them stolen, and
all right, man.
I needed a new one.
Robert says, I believe in miracles, and I said yes.
Amen.
Give me five, Robert.
Amen to that.
So what's your name? What's your name, sir?
Well, my name is Robert Sands.
Mm-hmm. Robert, nice to meet you. What do you have to say about this place, Robert?
Well, one thing is that it's a miracle from God, is what I say, because I've been disabled since I was a child, and I lived on disability my entire life, but I got married and lost it. These people are kind enough to give me a legal person free, because I can't afford, and get me hooked back on to my Social Security so I can become something eventually. And that's one of the major, major pluses of this place, is that they're able to help people when the people need the help.
Dave, give us 30 seconds with Dave. What do we need to know about Dave and the wonderful experience here?
Well, it's a very good place to come, and some people they don't want to come. There's no electricity, but it's like you've been living down the river. You haven't had electricity the whole time. Some people are like, and some people think that you get regulated. No, you can come and go as you please, anytime you want. You get meals here. The people are very supportive, and you have to, they make you go forward. In fact, I didn't know why I was called 14 Forward until just recently. It's because it's the end of 14th Street. So there's so many people here. The mayor's been here. I mean, they can open up all sorts of doors for you. You just have to put forth the effort yourself. If you don't, you're out of here.
And then you've been moving forward, because it was a wonderful story about how you used to sleep a lot, and now you're kind of up and about and really digging it here.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I guess society's not so bad after all, but I'm used to just sleeping all day and watching TV all day. Now, but I don't miss TV as much as I thought I would, because I got better things to do than watch TV all day. That's what Jason said before he died. He goes, Dave, you're just going to end up sleeping your life away. He's like, well, that's what I like doing. I've lost like 10 years, because really she got her head chopped off a while ago. But I still haven't. Back,
unbelievably traumatic, though. I mean, to be there, I can't imagine.
Oh, yeah, and then I find her head, and then I held her head in my hands, and the cop says, you don't need to see this. Or guess what? I already seen you. I got a mental picture of it. I'm like, they took it away from me. Because at first they suspected maybe I could have pushed her or something. I mean, they thought that maybe something happened. It's like, no, I didn't even know where she was. After both light bulbs crossed, I said, where's my girlfriend? Have you seen a girl? And the guy pointed over there. And there she was, with no head.
Dave, give me five, man. I'm going to see you at stand down.
But then when I did find her head, you know, I mean, you want to show it to me? It was calm and peaceful. I mean, it's like she was asleep.
That was a tough interview, man. I have to say, kind of the edit, I have a beautiful, about a 15-minute interview with Dave that I'm going to air on KZFR at some point. But the net here is Dave's been literally taken advantage of his entire life. He's a floorman, does floors, and he's got just like almost like a handful of stories where people like knew he was homeless and took advantage of him. And literally, he ended up at 14-4. They burned him out of his trailer. And anyone that knows anything about Yuba and Sutter County's fires in camps, suspicious fires in camps, encampments in Yuba, Sutter County are a fairly common thing. I saw it when I was on the streets doing work in Yuba, Sutter County, literally homeless 2 months in 2012. That was an issue back then. So keep everyone in your thoughts that are down there. And I'm going to transition to actually hear a really cool little piece with this wonderful lady named Gwen, who actually lives on site as a volunteer here on People Powered Radio.
But what's your name and what's your responsibility here?
Hi, I'm Gwen Wallace, and I'm site supervisor. I'm here 24/7.
How did you get involved with this wonderful process here, Gwen? How did you get connected with this?
I just happened to see it on Facebook one day, 14 Forward, and it was something I wanted to start up, temporary housing, career training. But my thing was more because I worked at a couple casinos that was for people that were losing their home and because of they had addiction to the gambling. So it was almost identical except for the gambling part of it. It just attracted me to it. And Kaya, now my boss, interviewed me and asked me if I had an RV, which I did. And I got the position.
What do you find the difference between services available for someone coming off addiction to gambling versus someone that's been homeless because they don't have enough money or available housing?
To me, it's just any addiction that they're going to spend their money on. I see an awful lot of the addictions there, switching it over to something that so many aren't ready. That's all there is to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they want the place to live, but they're still not getting off the drugs. And most places you go to work want the drug test, mm-hmm. you know, the random drug test, whether it's gambling or the addictions. The only 911 call I had to do here, since I've been here a little over a month, was for alcohol, of all things. A woman brought some in, and she's gone now. What is amazing is her mate, they came with her, totally different guy since she's been gone. You know, he's standing up for himself and stuff. So mm-hmm. it's been a good thing for him mm-hmm. that they did come here and she's no longer here.
So how long have you been the site supervisor?
Since July 15th, when the day they opened up.
Oh, so you've been here since the day they opened. Bless you. That's awesome. Yeah, so what kind of experiences have you seen? Maybe you can kind of give us a little bit of a thumbnail on the things you've seen.
It's amazing. I don't want to say different types of people, but I didn't grow up with somebody or raise my children not to mind. And it seems like people here, the higher percentage, are not used to answering to anybody. They're not used to rules. They're not used to having to do anything. And I see that an awful lot. We're part of them, say 20%, are little energy rabbits. They, you know, do everything for somebody. The other ones in cover for each other, where the other ones just lay around waiting for tomorrow mm-hmm. instead of going out and trying to get a job or trying to take advantage. I don't think it was really stated, which I didn't see the agreement between the county and the participants about getting the job, getting the housing. It's more the people have to be ready to go do it themselves. You know, go to HR. I know one of the girls didn't want to go over there because she couldn't get a bus ticket from here. Well, hello. You know, it's right down here. Street down 14th is one stop. It's not that far away. We're not going to hold their hand. In fact, that's half of it. A big percentage of what I see here is somebody, they want you to hold their hand and do it for them. They are bringing the caseworker now, the eligibility worker, to get food stamps. One person gets like 194 if they don't have any children, plus Medi-Cal. And food stamps, also they have three meals provided, which surprised me that you could get food stamps when you have three meals provided plus snacks. But they do. course, I've also seen them spend it in a couple of days in foods, in Pepsi and cigarettes instead, or trading for cigarettes somehow. Mm-hmm. I really see a small percent, but if you save one person, as they say, you know, it makes it worth it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I kind of feel like The Daily Show in a way. You can tune into our website to get the extended version. I'm going to cut that a little short, about 3 minutes short. But I just really had a wonderful conversation. Gwen was a wonderful person. It was nice having Bob there, too, down at the 14 Forward. I'm going to transition here to a really nice wrap-up piece for 14 Forward. This is actually the homeless project manager that physically works on site at 14 Forward. And she's being interviewed by Bob Trowles from Chico Housing Action Team here on People Power Radio.
With the change in society and jobs, we need homes, small homes for people.
Right.
And how are you looking at addressing that here? I mean, this is wonderful, but how are you addressing the next step as to actually create
right.
tiny homes or communities where people can actually stay as long as they need to, whether it's transitional by choice or whether it's I'm very happy in this space and I can stay here.
Right. So we're working to put together a development group that will include the Housing Authority and some of the builders that are local to address some of those affordable housing issues for the longer term. And what that looks like yet will depend on what the group kind of puts together. But we understand that this is like a small slice of what needs to happen.
So how are you going to deal with the county as far as code and variances? I mean, it's really difficult to get people to move forward on those things because many homeowners say, hey, wait, you're reducing the value of my property by having these things anywhere in our area. If you have a home that's 100, 200, or even 400 square feet, you're reducing the value of my property. You feel that you can address that with the county supervisors and the city council here to actually go to their code enforcement and the planning commission to get the changes necessary to have that happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so code enforcement has actually been part of our project since the very beginning. I think everybody understands that something has to happen and the status quo is no longer working. In order to change our outcomes, we have to change the way that we are delivering services. So I think that I'm sure that our Board of Supervisors is on board with that. And even in the city of Marysville is also on board with doing what's necessary to allow for change.
So would this come from the private sector or would this come from the city or county, like as far as land available to move forward with projects like that? Or would that just come from the private community that is, that is profit-based versus care-based?
Right. So that's a good question. And moving forward, I think that because we're putting this together, this group, that's going to include the county organizations as well as the nonprofits. So I think we're going to put our heads together and say, what can we do? I think we're pulling from all of our resources.
So you'll be pulling in the building community as well.
Right? Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
All right. Once again, thanks for Chico Housing Action Team for taking me down there and doing that interview and all the folks at 14 Forward and particularly the residents. I talked to a few vets. Hope you had a really good stand down and that you're listening in here on People Powered Radio. It's a really cool transition here. When I talked to Bob Trowles, they did a film, Chico Housing Action Team, a few years back. They traveled up the Pacific Northwest. And he had a couple of places he thought were worthy of doing some follow-up interviews. But one of them he mentioned was Dignity Village. And I knew as soon as he said that, there was a really nice piece done by Respectful Revolution, Gerard Ungerman, and Stacey Weir right here in Chico, California. So I'm going to play a radio edit of that. And then we're going to bring Gerard Ungerman on for a few minutes to kind of forward promote a show we're putting together the 23rd of September, 30 minutes with Respectful Revolution. So no further ado, this is Dignity Village produced by Respectful Revolution on People Powered Radio.
Hi, my name is Brad Gibson. I'm a resident here, a member actually, and I've served in many, many aspects of this village, vice chair, office manager. And I'm a homeless advocate. Well, this is a homeless village. It's built up, as you can see. It's all built up structures, no tarps. It's for people coming off the street. They need to get their stuff together, so they come out here, and it's transitional. We have a contract with the city, and we renew that about every 3 years. We're on a compost heap out on PDOT land. And like I said, we have micro businesses such as wood, and we get donations in. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. It started with about five people linking arms, and they said, well, we're not going to separate. You know, we're homeless. We need these things. We need community. So they went around with shopping cart train, a train of shopping carts. Every time they got swept, they stuck together and went on to the next camp. They get swept from there, and the train kept growing and growing. So they had a big demonstration. They said, they linked their arms all together and said, we're not moving. So the supporters got together. The press got together. The city officials got together. And everybody, they had a big old debate on a piece of property underneath the 405 bridge, which is the Fremont Bridge. And next thing, they got all kinds of supporters behind them. So that's where this property came in. And they got this property and started building it up out of recycled materials and donations. And it's been thriving ever since 2002.
I was living on the Columbia waterfront there on a marina. I was doing pretty good. Living like some people just, you know, would dream of living, I guess. The work, while it was there, you know, kept me, you know, in gasoline and in power boats, and, you know, I had a boathouse. But when the work went north, I couldn't go with it, so gradually just started losing everything, and all I had was kind of just pretty much the shoes on my feet, and I had a little dog with me, and she's in the house right now, by the way. It's been a struggle. It's probably been about, I think, going on 10 months that I've been here. I'm kind of glad. You know, this place offered me a refuge, so that was one good thing about it. I think I'm just trying to give back, trying to make this place a little better.
Back when I first moved here, there was a lot of outside activism going on, and this place kind of introverted from there, and I just stayed with it. Started going to the meetings, started getting active and involved, and trying to work for just causes. This is a very just cause, so I can't see living here and not being appreciative of those just causes.
Brad does a lot of the activism work, the mechanical work, support work. He's definitely a technological geek, which is a nice asset too. Understands the issues, the goals of trying to create more places for unhoused people to pull themselves up.
I was doing refrigeration in Las Vegas, refrigeration, air conditioning. Had my own tools. In order to keep a roof over my head, I had to work for minimum wage doing that. And, you know, that's a lot of education I had to get in order to do a job for minimum wage. And the exploitive factor with the employers around here, if you don't have a house, you get exploited in the employment market, as well as, you know, just to try to keep a roof over your head. There has to be a right to exist. You know, you can't be born and not have a place to go, but, you know, they illegalize camping. You know, there's camping bans, there's sit-lie ordinances, and we fight against those.
I think more and more that this village and what is going on here is going to be the trend. I think that's going to happen. I don't see any long-term solutions for what's been going on here in America. I just don't. We've been living beyond our means for decades. And until there's a reform, some kind of solid reform, this is what is going to happen more and more.
The Without a Roof radio program is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Trails and Vistas Art and Nature Festival at Lake Tahoe. Art hikes take attendees along a guided path past live music, art, storytelling, and dance performances. There are two hikes, Spooner Summit on Saturday, September 10th, and Donner Summit on Sunday, September 18th, each featuring 10 installations along a 3-mile route. More information and tickets, visit trailsandvistas.org. And by Airport Storage, providing safe and secure drive-up ground-level storage units in a variety of sizes. Airport Storage also offers on-site management, security cameras, and an automatic gate with extended hours. Located off Cohasset Road, across from Chico Airport, For more information, visit airportstorage.com or by calling 530-893-4279. All right, here we are back in the studio. It's really my pleasure. I haven't talked with Gerard in a while. He's just a wonderful human being, and he loves what he's doing, man. So why don't you introduce yourself to Respect for Revolution, Gerard, and give us a little, maybe 30 seconds on that visit to Dignity Village. Welcome.
Hi, Bill. Thank you very much for having me. Mm-hmm. Stacey's not far, but she's not here tonight with me. So Respect for Revolution, for those who don't know us, we crisscross the country and find people doing good things for others, nature, society, and the world. And Dignity Village, it's in Portland. I shot this particular story in 2003, time flies, 13, that's right. And so it was part of a group of stories I shot on the road in Portland. And it's a story that I really care about, and I think it's very indicative, I think, of a trend, a social and economic trend in this country, where economics are reducing, people are either losing their jobs or they're making less money, and I think as a society we've lived well beyond our means, you know, for many, many years now, and it's time to readjust. And of course, as always, those who have the least amount of money are the ones that suffer the fastest of these type of evolutions and are at the forefront of needing to adapt. No, they're not the only ones. But I think, you know, what struck me with Dignity Village, it looks and feels like an old pioneer village. It's like almost we're bridging the gap between the second half of the 19th century and the beginning of the 21st century, and returning to something that sort of makes sense on some level. When you don't have that much money, don't have that much space, you need to live in a more compact, I would say, form. And Dignity Village shows that and shows what people can do when they're given, you know, a little space, a little means. They just jump, you know, on the bandwagon and do something.
Yeah, like Bob had said in that 14 Forward piece, you know, we need permanent housing. So what if people really like it here and this is all they really need? You know why can't these people stay, you know? So where's your what's the latest with your project? Why don't you give us a little ditty on what you guys got going on?
Well, Respect for Revolution is at a crossroad, you know, right now. It's a case for us of either, you know, we grow and we increase our audience and therefore our funding, or we die, you know. And so what we are doing is, on the one side, we are developing a TV show for Free Speech TV, which is non-exclusive, so we'll be able to sell, you know, after to whatever stations, probably some PBS stations, I'm guessing. Well, they don't buy, but you show on PBS stations anyway. We are building, we have a first order for 10 episodes of half hour, and we already have three that Free Speech TV has been showing now for a few weeks. And tied to this is the search for sponsors. And we've put together a nice little media kit, showing our audience. We have quite a bit of, you know, we've had about 4 million minutes of views on YouTube, for instance, at this point. We are reaching 6,000 views on 6,000 likes on Facebook. We are growing our audience with Free Speech TV. I mean, we start to get out there. It's painstaking, but it's happening. And so now we are trying to attract a sponsor, maybe a motorcycle maker, since I travel by, you know, motorcycle, would want to basically use our project as a way to not only, you know, demonstrate one of their models and create an identity around the model and the project, but, you know, also would want to be associated with something that's essentially about doing good in our society.
So how do people, you talked about this free speech TV, how do people watch that? What would they do?
Free Speech TV is on DirecTV. They are on another, let me see, I forgot which other. But anyway, you can look it up. I mean, if you search Free Speech TV, freespeech.org is their website, freespeech.org. You can actually stream live their program right on their homepage. And other than that, they will tell you, once you're on freespeech.org, they will say exactly what are the stations on which cable and satellite providers you can see their programs.
What about your sites, Gerard?
So, our main website is respectfulrevolution.org, and we have a Respectful Revolution Facebook page and a YouTube channel, which is now quite busy.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to go out there and pull another one, You've got such a good variety. We talked a little bit offline before we got on the mic of different pieces. So I'm going to go out there and pull one and post it on Without a Roof, you know, and get people looking at it because I just love the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you.
So if you had 60 seconds to end your little short little piece here. And once again, listeners, I want you to know this is a Ford promo. We're going to have either pre-record or maybe even pre-record live. We're going to do 30 minutes on Respect for Revolution on the 23rd of September on the Peace and Social Justice Show. So 60 seconds, Gerard, go.
Well, you know, I always encourage people to watch our videos. We make these videos. We don't charge, of course, the people we feature. We don't charge people to watch these videos. They just need to be seen. And the more they're seen, the more they fulfill their mandate, which is to inform, uplift, and inspire. And so we always encourage people, you know, to check the variety of stories. We have a story list on our website, respectforrevolution.org. You can check the story list under stories and just pick something that seems interesting to you and watch it. And if you like it, maybe repost it on Facebook and tell friends to watch these stories too.
All right. All the best, my friend.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Take care.
Have a good evening.
You too. It's kind of cool because we got it lined. We have three people in the studio, so we're going to move right on right now to organization. You guys actually attended the Poor People's Palooza, right? You had a table there. That's how I met you, Tara. Tara's here from 211 Butte County.
Yes.
And your name again?
My name is Tracy.
Okay, why don't you guys introduce yourself and a little bit about your organization, 211 Butte County.
All right, I'm Tracy Stockdale. I'm an information and resource call specialist with Butte 211.
And I'm Tara Sullivan-Hames. I'm the director of Help Central, Inc., the nonprofit organization that is running the Butte 211 program.
Awesome. How many people do you have working there? Because I know, obviously, you've got the messaging service. You've got a really neat webpage. You guys are doing so much. I know you don't have a small army because this is a nonprofit. But how many people work there? And give us a little insight.
Yeah, we've got four basically full-time folks working for 211, but because we're grant-funded, we're able to bring other individuals on per, you know, grants that are underway for doing special projects, so outreach and marketing. Right now, we have our first-ever intern from the School of Social Work at Chico State, so we're super excited about that. And so it kind of... Our numbers vary, but typically it's four core individuals.
So when did you guys start again? I'm not even going to take a stab because I might be wrong on the year. I don't want to be wrong on air. When did you guys start? How did it all get going?
The actual 24-hour phone service that is 211, the helpline, began in 2013. But prior to that, we had been building the Butte County Health and Human Services database for more than a decade. And that was available online to the public for free as a searchable database for free and low-cost services. But it took us pretty much that decade to work with local partners to establish the 211 phone number and get the 24-hour helpline up and running.
So give us a little bit of flavor on what kind of calls you get, because it's a low-cost, no-cost service. So
you know, we get a wide variety of calls, to be honest. We provide information and resources for just about every population. But, you know, I just happened to bring a couple of statistics with me here from the last year. We'd actually had the largest amount of calls were for homeless shelter, being 156 callers, homeless financial assistance programs, and actually we've had probably 643 people who identified themselves as homeless calling us in the last year. And that's not to mention the people who did call and didn't want to identify as anything. And so again, that goes to we also keep track of the unmet needs. So, you know, there were about 31 calls for people looking for a hotel vouchers just even for a night that we were not able to fulfill. But yeah,
one of the interesting aspects of 211 is that we collect data on each of the calls, and so we know why people are calling, the services that we refer them to, and whether or not our community actually has services to meet the needs that they're looking for. So now that we've been up and running for about 3 years, we're able to start looking at that data, sharing it with local community leaders, and letting them see what we're seeing in terms of the community. Folks who are calling us, unmet needs of the service areas that are out there. So that's been an interesting piece for us as we kind of grow out of our infancy to be able to have that data collection.
Because what's kind of cool is you guys are going to reconnect at the end of the month because you're going to be on, too. We're going to do a full 30 minutes about Butte County 2-1-1, and it's my distinct pleasure. It's always a pleasure to have Carrington Scott Forbes in the house. Welcome to KZFR Radio, Carrington.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, Carrington's been working on a homeless resource guide at the Peace and Justice Center, and he put together some information, like a one-page information, but he knows a lot about the service, so maybe you could ask a couple of questions or give your insight on how great a service this is for unmet needs, Carrington.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I've actually been wondering, when did the, or how long has the website been going? Because one of the things I found the biggest problem with the youth is a lot of them haven't had phones, and or a lot of them didn't feel comfortable talking on the phone. And now, recently, I've noticed there's texting available and a website.
There is. We have a couple of different texting platforms, actually. I have one going right now. We do over at Butte 211 that is outgoing messages for homeless individuals. If you just text in "Be Home" to 898-211, we're sending out messages on a weekly basis, sometimes a little bit more than that, about services that are changing, even temporarily. With the hot weather we were having, about staying hydrated, taking care of your pet's feet. One of the lunch programs isn't going to be serving lunch at their regular place one day, so we're texting that out. Our website, actually, though, has been up for multiples of years. We've just kind of redesigned it in the past 3 years. And we also have where someone can text in their zip code to 898-211, and they can text us about needing resources. You don't have to pick up the phone.
Yeah. I think that is just wonderful, especially for the individuals with social anxiety and difficulties talking with people over the phone.
Yes.
It gives a lot of confidentiality.
Right. And 2-1-1 is a confidential service, so we're not sharing information with anyone. People can know and trust that when they reach out to 2-1-1, their information is kept private and confidential. One of the great things about the texting platform is that as soon as they text in, they still reach the live 2-1-1 specialist. So the same person that answers the phone if you call answers your text if you text. And that's the same person with the same level of expertise, information, ability to assist them in finding resources. So I think that's one of the pluses. It's not just an automated, you know, spit back a resource. There's still that engagement, even though it's through texting.
Yeah, that is amazing what you guys are doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm amazed, too, because it's going to be so much fun because we're going to do on the 23rd, we're going to put some test case scenarios together and have Carrington, maybe some other youth from our Youth for Justice program at the Peace and Justice Center call in and record all that. And I think that's going to be a really nice way to give people a good understanding of some of the things I've witnessed offline, seeing someone on the phone get off the phone. They're so happy for what's happened to them. So we got about another minute or so. So what do folks need to know? How do they get access to the sites? Is there anything we've missed so far? Because I know this has been kind of a quick interview. So.
Yeah, the website is just real easy. It's butte211.org. And on there, you can find special pages for special types of resource topics. We've developed things around parenting and, that kind of information around health issues. And hopefully, eventually, we will have kind of a special focus page around homelessness and homeless services in Butte County. So that's just real simple, easy to access. There's a full searchable database there that people can spend time with. Otherwise, again, very simple, easy to remember number, 2-1-1. You can call it 24 hours a day. A live person will answer. And you can call for any reason, and there's no restrictions on who can call.
Awesome. So fun to have all of you in here, including you, Gerard. So Beatle Nation's in the house. I love that transition. A bunch of youth that do this Beatles show every week. So I'm going to end it here with, this is my mom's favorite vignette from the Without a Roof Film Festival, and it's Brad Finney, man, punk rock troubadour, on the bumper leading us into Beatle Nation here on People Powered Radio.
I think it's generational. Like, what came before me influenced me. So now what I'm doing isn't really anything. It's not anything new. It's just a different version of, like, what I was inspired by.
Well, that's a good lead, because you said you got something new, at least new to you. You wrote this song. You're going to play it for us? We're going to record this thing, man.
Sure, man.
Let's do it. Let's bust this out.
I finally got back into, like, writing more. I kind of awesome. Had like a writer's block, I guess. And I had I had sobered up and like just had this view of that whole situation of like dealing with addiction and all that stuff. And somebody said, well, you know, I was talking to somebody and they were about like my career and all that stuff. And they were like, well,